Shalom. This is Billy Brim in the Voice of One Witness radio broadcast. We're looking at the Great Awakening, out of which the United States of America was born. Why are we looking at it? Because on June 29th, here at prayer, we were praying about the election that was upcoming in November, praying about our nation, praying about Israel and the world. The Lord interrupted us with a strong interruption, the Spirit of the Living God, and He said, there is one thing that will save America, and it is not the election. There is one thing that will help Israel and the world. It is an awakening to God. He caused us then to begin to study the United States of America, how it came forth out of the Great Awakening. And we've looked at it this week. Our radio broadcast is archived. I have found in the secular world, as I've gone online to study the Great Awakening, everyone acknowledges that the United States of America came together out of the Great Awakening. This came from a little, I don't even know what it is. Here's how you get it, www.wfu.edu. And this is called Lecture 4, The Great Awakening. It came up when I just put it online, The Great Awakening. The Great Awakening, it must be from some university. The Great Awakening was a watershed event in the life of the American people. Before it was over, it had swept the colonies of the eastern seaboard, transforming the social and religious life of the land. The Great Awakening was not one continuous revival. It was several revivals in a variety of locations. One cannot be awakened unless you have fallen asleep. They had fallen asleep. The Anglicans, who came to dominate religious life in Virginia, Puritans in the Massachusetts Bay, had all virtually gone to sleep. And the country had been expanding, and they had great distances between the colonies, no way of communication, and they had fallen into the state of being unchurched. But as this rationality grew, there was one of the principal figure that God used, I'm reading again from their writings, in the Great Awakening, who was Jonathan Edwards. Edwards has received bad press for his sinners in the hands of an angry God. In that sermon, he used the image of a spider dangling by a web over a hot fire to describe the human predicament. His point was that at any moment, our hold on life could break and we'd be plunged into fires of eternal damnation. But if you read his sermons, you will find that he spoke quietly, reasonably, and logically. Indeed, he was dry and even a bit boring. He began to experience, however, a harvest of conversions that were accompanied by exaggerated behavior. And this, of course, is something I took off the internet. People would shout and run when they were converted. And soon this thing spread throughout all the Connecticut Valley, there from the man Jonathan Edwards. I want to read to you something that is said about him in The Great Awakening. And this is the book, 2,000 Years of Charismatic Christianity by Eddie Hyatt. We're making this book available to you this week for $10. The Great Awakening, 1726 to 1750. Colonial America in 1726 was in moral and spiritual decline. The challenges of frontier life and a series of brutal wars had demoralized many, and a shortage of churches and ministers had left many without spiritual care. Many existing churches had degenerated into formal religious institutions with no power to bring the much-needed change. Jonathan Edwards was pastor of the Congregational Church in Northampton, Massachusetts. He expressed his concern for a general, quote, this is his wordage, general deadness throughout the land, and set himself to seek God for a revival of religion. Others also began to seek God diligently, and in 1726, a spiritual awakening broke out in various regions along the eastern seaboard. One of the communities where the Holy Spirit outpoured significant power was Northampton, Massachusetts. Indeed, an awesome sense of divine presence permeated the entire community. And folks, this is Billy Brim, my comment. Every one of the awakenings, that's what happens. The presence of God becomes so overpowering, so invasive that even men on the street, not even in a church, fall at the presence of God. Edwards reports that during the spring and summer of 1735, quote, the town seemed to be full of the presence of God. In every part of the town, the Spirit of God was powerfully at work until, quote, there was scarcely a single person in the town, old or young, left unconcerned about the great things of the eternal world. Without any sort of planned evangelistic outreach, quote, and these quotes are Jonathan Edwards, souls did, as it were, come by flocks to Jesus Christ. Edwards' church suddenly filled with those seeking salvation and with those experiencing the fruit of already being born again. Edwards writes, our public assemblies were beautiful. The congregation was alive in God's service, everyone intent on the public worship, every hearer eager to drink in the words of the minister as they came from his mouth. The assembly were, in general, from time to time, in tears while the word was preached, some weeping with sorrow and distress, others with joy and love, others with pity and concern for the souls of their neighbors. People from other communities often scoffed when they heard of the events in Southampton. Simply upon entering the community, however, their skepticism inevitably dissipated because of the overwhelming presence of God. As converts returned home, they carried the spirit of revival with them, and so the awakening spread. During this time, Edwards preached his famous sermon, Sinners in the Hands of an Angry God. So powerfully did conviction of sin grip the people that Sunday morning that the penitent cries for mercy drowned out Edwards' voice. Hell became so real to the congregation that some clutched the backs of pews, while others wrapped their arms around the pillars to keep, as it were, from being consumed by its eternal flames. You know, folks, that had to be God, because Edwards was reading his sermon in a monotone, staring at the back wall. But God made them cognizant of hell. We're going to read about other awakenings, and people realize they're on the verge of hell if they don't accept the Lord. Now, I'm reading again from 2,000 Years of Charismatic Christianity. The power that accompanied Edwards' preaching was not the result of his topic alone. Preaching on the terrors of hell did not monopolize his sermons. He was, in fact, a very sensitive individual who could be melted to tears while contemplating the love and mercy of God. Neither was the power the fruit of his oratorical skill, for Edwards normally read his sermons. His preaching derived its power from his prayer life. He would spend whole days and weeks in prayer, and it was not unusual for him to spend 18 hours in prayer prior to preaching a single sermon. The result was a revival that not only transformed the moral and spiritual character of his own community, but that of the entire nation. Folks, God has been talking to us since June about united prayer for an awakening. Here from Prayer Mountain every Wednesday at noon, we're praying for 1 hour about nothing else than an awakening. You can call it an outpouring, you can call it a revival, you can call it whatever you want to. God knows what we mean. And we're uniting to ask Him for prayer, for an awakening in the United States of America. We are going to have a communion January 28th at noontime. And we're hooked up every day. We're streaming this live. We're joined every day with Ireland. You'll see why Ireland when we talk on a later broadcast. But we're joined with Pastor Paul Brady in that church on January 28th. Pastor Brady will be with us, and we'll be taking communion across America and around the world in uniting in prayer for an awakening to God. Hallelujah. We've seen, it's going to take some dedication from us, folks. It's going to take some, we read in Romans 13, starting with verse 11, that we are to put down, we are to wake up, seeing what time it is, and we're to put down some of the lusts of our flesh. So we're making, all of us are making a dedication. There fell into our hands something. Our family at New Year's had gone around a circle saying what would we would make our New Year's resolutions. My son, my grandson, Cody Oakes, married Brother Copeland's granddaughter, Aubrey Pearson's. And they were down at the big cabin. And they found there a very old book that we had used for decorating. And it was called Harper's Fifth Reader. This fifth reader is for the fifth grade students, and it contains American authors' writings. They say here in the beginning that American youth cannot too early be led to a knowledge of the extent and varied richness of our own literature, to cultivate a spirit of patriotism, and to inculcate a commendable pride in the achievements of our countrymen is one of the first duties of the schools. Oh, folks, this reader that was put together in 1823 is filled with the writings of preachers, ministers, great authors, and it has in it the resolutions of Jonathan Edwards. He made these when he was a young man, but it gives you some idea into the character of the man who through his prayer life, yes, touched God, but also his holy life. Number one, I'll read whatever I have time to read here, resolved that I will do whatever I think to be most to the glory of God. Resolved to live with all my might while I do live. Resolved never to do anything which I should be afraid to do if it were the last hour of my life. Resolved never to do anything out of revenge. Resolved never to suffer the least motions of anger toward irrational beings. Resolved never to speak evil of anyone so that it shall tend to his dishonor, more or less, upon no account except for some real God, real good. Resolved that I will live so as I shall wish I had done when I come to die. Resolved never to do anything that if I should see it in another, I should count it as a just occasion to despise him. Resolved to study the scriptures so steadily, constantly, and frequently that I may find plainly and perceive myself to grow in the knowledge of the same. Resolved never to say anything at all against anybody, but when it is perfectly agreeable to the highest degree of Christian honor. Resolved never to speak anything but what is pure and truth. Henny goes on to say that he resolves to live that if only one person in all the world could be deemed to be the most complete Christian in any one time, he resolved to live to be that man in his time. That's what Romans calls us to. And we're dedicating ourselves and we're praying for a great awakening. We'll send you two books, 2,000 Years of Christianity, Charismatic Christianity, or Revival Fire. Both books you need. You can have one or both, $10 each. Just call us at 1-800-972-3447. And please do your best to join us for our School of Eschatology here at Prayer Mountain, April 14 through 17. It will be a small class, only 200, so you need to register. Call 1-800-972-3447. Shalom.